In Simony of Dalad, there are a number of questions which frequently arise and are frequently litigated in Dine Torah. Technical issues, but very important technical issues. There is the question of venue selection. There's the question of written verdicts, detailed or not detailed written verdicts. Not going to have a chance to get into all these different important issues. One thing I want to discuss tonight is a halacha discussed later in the Simon, Sifhei. That is the question of costs. Who bears the costs of a Din Torah? Costs include both the Beis Din fees we've discussed previously. Even though Beis Din is not supposed to charge, there are heterim, and Batei Din usually often do charge. Legal costs both sides have, transportation costs, schar b'teila, you take off from work, all these different types of costs. Who bears the cost of a Din Torah? So, just to compare to secular law for a moment, in modern Western law, there is a major dichotomy between what is called the English rule, the rule that applies in England and some of the, I guess, Commonwealth countries, and the American rule, the rule that usually applies in America. Sometimes you read discussions of lawsuits in one or the other, and you know, you're not familiar with it, but the English rule is that the loser, the one who loses the case, bears the costs of both sides. The loser will typically be obligated to pay the costs of the winning side. The American rule is that nobody pays anything. Everyone pays his own costs. The court, I guess, assesses fees however they want. The fees are on both, or on the plaintiff, or whatever the rules are. But the court assesses fees, and the rest of the costs, legal fees and everything, are borne. Each side bears his own costs. There are typically no instructions by the court. There are exceptions, of course, like everything else, but in general, the standard rule is nobody bears the other side's costs. The one exception often is frivolous lawsuits. If the court decides a lawsuit is frivolous and bad faith, the guy knew he had no case, he knew the facts didn't support his case, he knew the law didn't support his case, then, not clear if there's an exact rule, but a court frequently will either just fine the losing side or make him pay all or part of the winning side, but in general, there's no obligation for one side to cover the other's costs. What's the halacha? What does halacha say about the obligation of a losing side to contribute anything toward the winning side's costs? So, as it turns out, the halacha is even less, doesn't even go as far as American law necessarily, certainly not as far as the English law, where people are typically obligated to pay costs. In halacha, you are typically not obligated to pay the other side's costs. In virtually every Din Torah, maybe not every Din Torah, but it's extremely common in Dine Torah that each side is angry at the other side, feels the other side is wasting his time. Litigants frequently ask Beis Din to order the other side to cover their costs. It is almost, at least in my experience, it is rarely, if ever, granted. People want or expect them to get costs, but it's rarely ever granted. You read Dine Torah out of Eretz Yisrael, there's frequently a comment about, after the main ruling, a comment about hotzaot. Typically, I think it reads ein tzav lahotzaot. We're not ordering anything about cost, meaning each side bears his own. Halacha, it is clear from the Baalei HaShulchan Aruch, under normal circumstances, halacha does not award the costs of either side. The loser does not pay the winning side's costs. This is based on a Gemara. The consensus of the Rishonim infers this from a Gemara. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, halacha, actually, we're learning at the beginning of the Siman about venue selection. If the nitva, if the love wants to go travel to the Beis Avad, so the Gemara says he can't do that because it's unfair to the Toveil, it'll cause him to have all kinds of expenses. The Gemara says, Kofenos of Adon Beiro, and we show him use the language that it's not fair because we'll force him to be Yotzi Mana Al Mana. It's bad enough that he owes him the money, now he's going to force him to spend Yotzi Mana Al Mana. How can we do that? Not fair. So the implication is that he's not going to bear the cost, even if he loses. Because if he's gonna bear the cost, the Rishonim say, then what's the problem? They can argue that, what if I don't win? What if I'm making a mistake? What if he can't afford the cost? But that's the raya of the Rishonim, that in general, Beis Din does not order the losing side to pay the cost of the winning side. In the Shulchan Aruch, there are two exceptions to this rule. One of them, which hopefully we'll discuss a little more on Wednesday, is if you stand somebody up. If you make a meeting, make an appointment, this can apply outside Beis Din too. This is a principle with very broad ramifications throughout halacha, throughout business, throughout b'nan l'chavero. If you stand somebody up, you make an appointment and you don't show up, and the other person had expenses to get to the meeting, the one person traveled to the Beis Din, you promised you would, you didn't show up. This can come up in other areas of halacha too, stam meetings, other types of meetings. then you are chayev as a form of mazik, as a form of gurim. You are gurim mehezik to the other side. You will be chayev. So if you had cost based on other guys promising to meet you there and he didn't, you can be chayev in that case. That's something we'll discuss a little more, Ezra's Hashem, on Wednesday. The other example, the other case in the Shulchan Aruch where there will be instructions for one side to pay cost to the other is in the case of Siruv. If someone flouts the instructions of Beis Din, refuses to show up, and the other side therefore is authorized by Beis Din to take action, to spend money, to go to court, to do other things, pass court is machlokas, see in the Shulchan Aruch. But in certain cases, once somebody has been formally established to be a Masarev, then the cost the other side incurs to bring him to heel, to get him under control, will be awarded. But again, that's only if he's a proper Masarev. You have to be Mavar, he's a Masarev. That doesn't just mean that he's not cooperating as nicely as you want him to, that he's not getting along nicely. Siruv is a formal technical category. After Siruv, then you can get cost. But without Siruv and without one side failing to show up to meetings, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't allow for the awarding of cost pretty much ever. So what do we have? What we have is the Yeshua Yisrael. The Yeshua Yisrael is the Sefer of Yisrael Yeshua of Kutna. He has a great chiddush, which is brought by all the later authorities. He argues that even though the early poskim, the Rishonim, the Shulchan Aruch, just flatly say that we don't award cost, barring the exceptions mentioned previously, he says that only means in a non-frivolous lawsuit. That's only talking about a case where the plaintiff or the defendant acted in good faith, meaning that they weren't lying about the facts. Furthermore, they at least had a reasonable expectation the halacha might be the way they thought. They don't have to be experts in din. We don't ask them to be experts in din. People are lav din gemiri. The standard assumption is that ordinary people are not expected to be experts in choshen mishpat. So as far as he knows, he had a real case. But in a case, he says, where he was lying, we caught him lying. And again, he says, if you just couldn't bring enough proof to support your case, and you lost because the presumption was against you, that's still not enough. That's still not called frivolous. If, for example, if the creditor produces a loan document, a shtar, and you say it's paid, Basin says, well, if you can't produce a receipt and he has a shtar, we say shtar chabiyadi my boy. If he has a shtar and you can't produce a receipt, then you're going to be chayev because we don't believe you. We don't believe you, you're going to have to pay the money, but we still can't prove that you were acting in bad faith. You claim that honestly you paid, even though we don't believe you if you can't prove it. We don't not believe you enough to actually sanction you for entering into a frivolous lawsuit. The only case that we're going to award cost, he says, we will award cost in a case we actually caught you lying. You made a claim that was actually refuted by Adim or by some other form of compelling evidence. In such a case, he says, we will be mechayev of you, again, as a form of mazik, as a form of grum. Just like we mentioned earlier, if you call a meeting and you don't show up, that's considered, the post can say, you directly cause harm to the other party. So if you deliberately, knowingly engage in a lawsuit and cause the other guy to incur costs, he actually has a lengthy and very complex discussion of this, but his basic idea, his basic position is that you are chayev as a gorem, as a mazik. Even that, he says, is not so simple. It depends. We distinguish between the plaintiff and the defendant. When the plaintiff summons the defendant to come to a din Torah, defendant has no choice. He must answer the summons. He was minding his own business. And if plaintiff, in bad faith, lied and summoned him to a din Torah, then plaintiff directly caused him the hezek. That's garmi, that's direct enough that he's chayev. If, however, defendant who was summoned by the plaintiff in bad faith insisted on litigating the matter, even though he knew he was liable, and in the end he lost, there he says, it's not so simple. He may not be chayev, even though he acted in bad faith, because at the end of the day, it was the plaintiff's decision to bring the lawsuit. Even though he only brought it because he needed the money back, since it was the plaintiff had a choice to do it or not, he brings Rishonim. It's a complicated sugya. We're not going to get into it right now. But he says, in that case, he says, it's machlokas Rishonim and lahalacha. Later poskim say, lahalacha, since it's machlokas, we would not actually be able to mechayev the defendant in such a case, in spite of the fact that he acted in bad faith. This is even more... an even higher bar to cross than the American thing. The American thing, if you clearly acted in bad faith, you would get sanctioned. Halacha, not necessarily. The plaintiff who forced the defendant into a bad lawsuit would be sanctioned, he says, but the defendant, not so simple, the defendant is not so simple, might not be sanctioned. Now, I was reading, when I was researching this topic, I read an interesting article by a Rabbi Weissman, who was listed as the Menahel of the Basin of America. He has a very nice article going through the sugya of the question of when Beis Din can force a defendant to cover the cost, the losing litigant, to cover the cost of the winning litigant. He mentions one exception, which I had actually learned earlier in Ebenezer. There are some Batei Din out of Eretz Yisrael that that have ruled, one exception to this rule, that a losing litigant does not typically, assuming he acted in good faith, or we give him the benefit of the doubt that he acted in good faith, will not generally be chayav to cover the cost of the plaintiff. One exception, he says, is in a divorce, alimony, child support case. In a case where a woman sues her husband or her ex-husband for support, either for herself or for her children, and the husband is found responsible and is forced by the Beis Din to pay the costs. So several distinguished Dayanim and Bat Hadin in Eretz Yisrael have ruled that in such a case, the woman will be awarded costs too. Rabbi Ram Shapiro in one Beis Din, other Bat Hadin included Dayanim such as Rabbi Yaakov Rosenthal, a very distinguished Dayan, or Baruch Rakover, ditto, or Avadya Hadaya, ditto again. A number of very distinguished Dayanim have ruled that in cases where a woman has sued the husband for support, he will be found liable for, if he loses, at least if he loses, he'll be found liable for court costs too. Why? So Rav Avram Shapiro gives two reasons. One reason is, he says, when we award a woman costs, maintenance costs, support, what does that mean? She needs the money to live. So you have to use the net value of what she's actually getting, not the gross of the Beis Din's award. If she needs $10,000 to live, if that's the mizonos, the support to which Chazal entitled her, but her legal costs are $1,500, she's only going to end up with $8,500 in her pocket. That's not enough to support her. So you have to make sure that she gets mizonos net of the net has to be her needs, not the gross. So you have to award her costs also. Another argument he makes, we'll discuss that more in a minute. Another argument he makes is that we find a husband has all kinds of different responsibilities besides strictly, literally mizonos. We find that he has all kinds of other responsibilities too to support his wife in various other ways. He brings a famous psak of the Trumas Adeshin, that in a case where a woman was chayav a knas, some kind of penalty to the civil authorities, the husband has to cover it. So beyond mizonos, the husband has a general obligation to support her with other things too, including her legal fees. I've long found both of these arguments to be very problematic. Again, they seem to have been accepted by a number of Gedolei Hadayanim in Eretz Yisrael. I have a lot of trouble with both these arguments. The question about mizonos, I don't understand why mizonos is a special case. Every loan case, I lent you $10,000. I'm entitled to get $10,000 back. If I have to spend $1,500 on legal fees, I'm also only gonna net $8,500. Is that fair? No. I mean, it's not very fair, but that's the way the system works. So why exactly is mizonos such a special case? Why is the chiyuv pei mizonos so sacred? Apparently they felt that mizonos is less about a dollar figure and more about, there are discussions in Evan Ezer in cases where if she lost her money, is she entitled to more money? Assuming she lost it not through her fault, if it was stolen before she had a chance to buy food. So there are maybe some rayas in Evan Ezer that the chiyuv mizonos is treated more as a bottom line chiyuv, make sure she has food, less about a dollar figure, but it's not so simple. What would you say about medical costs? In the case, we know that in Tashlumei Chavala, in an assault or battery case, you pay for ripui. Did you say also that ripui has to be net of the legal costs? Because you have to be able to pay the doctor bills. Maybe you do. I don't know. Anyway, it's not so obvious to me the cogency of this svara. The other svara I have even more trouble with, the idea that a husband is generally responsible for all his wife's expenses. This reminds me of, in constitutional law, people talk about penumbras. When you want to invent a right that isn't actually listed in the Bill of Rights, you say, well, in the right to privacy, it's a kind of penumbra that emerges from all the other things in the Bill of Rights. That's kind of, you know, woolly thinking, in my view, and you know, you have to find it specifically in the text. You can't just...
Fourth Amendment, isn't it?
Fourth Amendment is the right to be protected against seizures and your papers and your person. Yeah, there are privacy rights, but the idea that, let's say, contraception is included in a general right to, or the right to do certain things, these rights are... All right, we can discuss that further later, but the... So here also, the Chazal listed numerous chiyuv my husband has to his wife. There are, Rambam says there are 10 of them. There's mizonos, there's dira, there's ksus. He has to give her room and board and food, medical care, burial. Chazal listed very specifically, they didn't just say, give her everything she needs. They said, give her this and this and this and this and this. And each one is connected to a certain thing that she gives him, and he can waive one and get the other one. There's a very precise list of chiyuvim. And when the Trumas Adeshin says he has to pay her koh, has to pay her knossos, there's a very specific reason for that. I'm not going to get into it today, but it's not Stam because he invents a general chiyuv to pay for all her needs. He has a very specific argument why he should have to pay those fines in question. So to just argue and say he has to pay all her chiyuvim, I'm not really sure where that comes from. They actually bring, the Notzer Poskim actually brings that there are dissenting views. They bring Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, who actually said that no such thing, that there's no cost, that we're not going to award cost in the case of Mizonos more than any other case. And they actually found a Chuvas HaRashba that was more recently published in Tufshin Mem Dalad. Rashba takes it over Pashut that we don't award a woman cost when she sues her husband for Mizonos. He says, why should we? We don't award a cost for any time. No litigant is awarded costs, even when he wins, no litigant is awarded costs. Again, barring the exceptions of Siruv or other cases. And the Rashba already says, Mechatesi, that we should award any cost just because the claim was Mizonos. Rashba can't think of any earthly reason why we should award costs. Ramosha in the Igros Moshe has a tshuva where he discusses, he was actually writing to a dayan in London, Rav Grossness, and Rav Grossness, apparently the policy of the Beis Din there was that the loser pays costs, which, as we said, is the English rule in secular court, so I guess the Beis Din had a similar rule in its Beis Din, and the justification was that they actually wrote that into the Shtari Berurin. They wrote that into the arbitration agreement that when people came to Beis Din, they would sign, they would agree up front that the loser was going to bear the cost of the Din Torah. He had a number of questions about, is there a Shochad question here? Are there other issues? Beis Din is not charging both sides equally anymore. So he discusses, Ramosha discusses different things. One of the questions Ramosha discusses is whether such a Shtar is an Asmachta. We don't have time to get into Asmachta tonight, but Asmachta is a rule that certain kinds of conditional agreements, only if this happens will I be chayev. People don't expect that to happen. They don't mean to be chayev themselves. Not always enforceable. So Ramosha has a lengthy discussion about whether such a shtar is an asmachta, and he actually is inclined to say that it is, and you have to apply certain techniques to avoid the shtar being an asmachta. But in general, that's another thing to realize. You can always be mechayev yourself, but you run into other questions of asmachta, and possibly if you're doing it deliberately to copy the laws of the non-Jews, that's also a shaila, as we've discussed previously.